If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the divine love that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Heaven on Earth is Making Friends with What Is. Heaven on Earth is Making Friends with What Is. So, you're ready? Set your intention, and as you take a deep breath within, connect and integrate your God self. Deep breath. Connect. Breathe in, integrate. Bring that energy right down into your feet. Excellent. Excellent. You see, your intention is what does it all. Your intention is the God force within you. And based on your intention will be the manifestation in like kind. Simple, simple key to manifestation. You always manifest your intention. Even when you're not consciously intending, if you pay attention, you'll notice there's an intention behind everything you say, think, and do. Maybe hidden in your subconscious, but it's there nevertheless. So pay attention to your intention. And now we're going to do the simplest possible integration, clearing way of staying in the God presence all the time. You ready for it? This is simple. You pay attention right now to your breath. Are you kind of hurried and breathless from maybe a very challenging day? Are you just kind of trying to get settled and tune into what I'm saying? Or is this your morning time? Or for some of you, you may be retiring, getting ready to go to sleep. We go out to the nations all over the world, so you could be in any place. But wherever you are, this simple technique will do everything for you. You know, truth is so simple. So if you're fairly settled, let's go. I want you, if you like, if you choose, it's always free will here, I suggest that you slowly breathe in God and very consciously breathe out love. Ready? Breathe in God. Breathe out love. Breathe in God. Breathe out love. Breathe in God. Breathe out love. Now you see, you don't have to know what God is. God is beyond your ideas and concepts. And you don't have to feel love. Maybe you're in a state of agitation right now, feeling anything but God and love. And that's when this breath will be the most helpful to you. You see, your intention to breathe in God and breathe out love will align you with your divine core. And when you breathe out love, everything that is upset within you will be dissolved in that love. Isn't that the coolest thing? Your loving does it all. If you're sick, your loving will bring in the healing. If you're angry, that loving will dissolve the agitation and anger. If you're worried and freaked out and upset, your loving will transmute that. So again, let's breathe in God. And breathe out love. And breathe in God. And breathe out love. If you're really mad at somebody, mad at your children, mad at your partner, mad at yourself, you breathe in God. And you breathe out love. And I promise you, if you keep doing that, you'll find every single part of your agitation dissolving. And you'll find that you're in the presence of the Divine Spirit. Simple, huh? So, if I'd ask you to define heaven on earth, what would you say? Is it a present reality for you right now in your life? I have to say honestly, it is for me. I've been living in heaven on earth now for some time. But I've also lived in hell on earth for a large part of my life, like most of us. So it's a, let's say it's a recent for me acknowledgement of that which is. So is it a present reality for you right now at this moment? Or is it simply a vague utopian ideal that, like most people, we place off into some future after something happens? Or someone appears like Mighty Mouse to save the day. I mean, think about it. Are you waiting for something to happen to live in heaven on earth right now? And I think, you know, most of us give no thought at all to heaven on earth. We're just too darn busy trying to survive and make a living in the rat race. You know, dodge the gridlock when you're on the freeway trying to commute home and, you know, wonder how fast you can prepare dinner and deal with your kids and your spouse or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But the fact remains, we are not rats. Nor are we in a rat race, except in our mind. We are, in fact, incarnations of the Supreme Absolute. We are God's incarnations in time-space. We are embodiments of the one divine spirit, the Atma, the great I Am. Truth. That's the fact. And we're having a human experience. At least we think we are. And maybe that's up for questioning too. What if we've never been here at all? As the Course in Miracles tells us again and again. We've never left the heart of God. We've never left home. We've never done any of this stuff. It's all been a play of imaginative scenarios that's been going on only in the mind. The mind that dreamt it was separate from the all that is, from the love that is, from the perfection that is. And we dreamed the whole thing. And that only, get this, only the thoughts we share with God are real. That means every single egocentric, crazy, mashugana thought that we have, that is not the thought of God, which is ever seeing the divine perfection in you and everything, that all of those other thoughts have not registered at all because they're false. They've had no impact or effect on you at all. Isn't that awesome? Not my concept, not my thoughts. Those are from Jesus, from the Course in Miracles. Only the thoughts you share with God are real. And all the rest are utterly nothing. They've had no effect. Oh my gosh, if we could get this. If we could search for the thoughts we think with God. Thoughts of loving and kindness and goodness and perfection and beauty and rapture and ecstasy and bliss and joy and peace and everything that makes you come alive inside and thrilled to be alive. Those thoughts are real. And everything else you can just tell yourself that your meaningless thoughts are showing you a meaningless world that you can quietly lay aside and offer to the Holy Spirit for correction. You don't need to process what never was. So, we are not rats. We are incarnations of the one absolute supreme divine spirit. So, it is very possible, in fact, in my understanding, it's inevitable that we can and will all be at some point living in heaven in a higher state of divine awareness while at the same time functioning effectively on earth. That's that natural yoga, that natural sahaja samadhi that we spoke of last week. That's the natural state of divine equanimity that we are meant to live in. So that is the purpose behind all of the ancient yogic practices that are fast becoming mainstream worldwide. Now people use the terms karma, dharma, right on television, all the time, you know, in the sitcoms. They'll use mindfulness, meditation, yoga, practicing the presence, the art of skillful living, compassionate awareness, all of that has become mainstream. And it's spreading because humanity is waking up. We are in the shift of the ages, and people are really waking up right and left. However, to live in heaven on earth now, it's simply a matter of making friends with what is, with whatever experiences, people, situations, whatever presents into your present now. We need to make friends with that. Everything in the universe is rigged for our favor. And everything in the universe rearranges itself to accommodate your picture of reality. It's non-judgmental. It's completely impersonal. It replicates the energy that you place out. It matches it perfectly. So if you're an angry and spiteful person, you're going to experience a very angry, spiteful world that seems to be threatening you on all sides. That's not God punishing you. That's not your karma. It's simply the natural reaction of the universal atoms to the energy that you're putting out. If you are a person that's friendly and kind and outgoing and, you know, you walk out into the world with a sense of goodwill, just goodwill, you'll find the world is like that. You'll find a world where people are kind and accommodating and helpful, and they reflect back to you your own goodwill. That has nothing at all to do with the outer world. It is simply the natural reflection of your own energy back to you. You are known as energy in the universe. Babies, animals, and even people subconsciously react to your energy. So if you don't like the feedback you're getting in your world, shift your energy. Simple. Discipline yourself to smile. Just lifting the corners of your mouth shifts the whole chemical composite that's flooding through your body. Begins to release the positive hormones, endorphins. So practice smiling. Anybody can do that. You feel grumpy? Smile. Fake it till you make it. But shift your energy. So we need to learn how to see everything moment by moment as part of our highest divine good unfolding. Because that's exactly what it is. Everything that you experience is part of your journey to wholeness and total love and peace all the time. All the time. It's part of your journey. So I'm going to share with you something that I experienced this morning. Well, I experience it most mornings. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to share this because, boy, it brought forward the teachings of how to recognize that you're in the state that we often refer to as Sat-Chit-Ananda, existence awareness bliss. And it shows you a very simple way to move into your bliss body, your Ananda Kosha. So simple. And it's this. Each day has a sound. It has a special atmosphere and a special feeling. And it has a message to impart to you. Every time you go to sleep, whether it's a nap or for at night, you automatically slip into a higher state of consciousness. Your awareness moves from this life in the outer physical third dimensional world to a higher dimensional reality that is every bit as experientially real as your physical waking state. And it carries a subtle essence with it when you wake up before you could become fully conscious. You have to catch it just as you're opening your eyes without moving the body. I would suggest strongly that you don't depend on an alarm clock to awaken because that will shatter you and shock you back into full awakening consciousness and you lose the most precious spiritual connection. It's just when you're waking up and just when you're falling asleep that you can catch a sense of your multidimensional grandeur, if you will. That vaster self, that multidimensional, omnipresent being and existence in which you dwell all the time. So, if you'd like, I suggest that you practice training yourself to awaken before your alarm goes off. You can set the alarm if you're worried about being late for school or work or whatever. You know, you'll have that down, so you don't have to be worried. But I've trained myself, well, I don't use anything now. I just wake up, you know, I don't have to be to work or anything. But when I used to have to adhere to a schedule, I would train myself to awaken 15 minutes before the alarm or whatever would go off. And if you suggest to your subconscious that that's what's going to happen, that you're going to wake up at, you know, 6:45 or whenever it is that you wake up, Your subconscious will automatically do that for you. Another trick, which I also suggest to you, when you want to take a little power nap and you have maybe 15 minutes, you know what I do? I ask that the time experientially slow down so that I have a feeling of sleeping for a whole hour rather than 15 minutes. And I absolutely swear that that time, that hand on that clock moves so slow, I can't, you know, it's just amazing. So we have control over time. We have control over our experience of time. We are not subjected to time. Time is suggested to our belief. It's an idea, a concept in the mind. And we have control over the experience of time, space, distance, and the experience as you move through the dream fields of time and space and distance. And you learn how to make these things work for you because you have divine authority as an incarnation of God to do that. So anyway, back to starting your day. The practice we'll call is listening awareness. So you have awakened, and you're gradually tuning in to the feel of the day. You're not thinking at this point, you're feeling, you're sensing. Don't get your mind going, just hang out and feel. And experience and sense. And the day will suggest its mood, its atmosphere. We all know, you know, when a storm is pending, you know, and there's like a heaviness in the atmosphere and maybe a distant thunder, maybe a little rain on the roof. It has like a feel to it, doesn't it? Or maybe there's a soft falling of snow. Or maybe it's like here in Southern California where, oh, I love to hear the morning doves. I love to hear the crows. There's all these different bird calls in the morning. And maybe you have that wherever it is that you live. In India, it's so wonderful to hear all the different tropical birds and the sounds. Or in Australia when I was there, the most amazing bird calls. We're in the tropics, just amazing sounds in the morning. But you know what? I also really enjoy listening to the traffic. If you're in a high rise in New York City, all the sounds of the, you know, people waking up, the vendors calling, and, you know, life happening. We're in Paris, you know, people bustling around getting their grocery shopping done, you know, whatever. You know, there's like a bliss. There's a bliss in listening to life happen. Babies crying, dogs barking, sound of traffic. You know, if you make friends with it, and you begin to open your heart to it without creating some sort of resistance, you'll find that it becomes blissful. And that's the practice of the art of listening awareness. I'm going to give you a little simple technique. Let's say you're listening. Let's say that's let's say you're downtown in a major city, maybe Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, New York, well, you know, wherever. And so what you're going to hear a lot of sirens, you know, police and fire and the different people that go about. So there's lots of sirens, police sirens, whatever. And you'll hear the rumble of traffic. And the honking of horns. In India, you're going to have all the little, auto rickshaws with the horns blaring and the cars. But, you know, if you don't resist it and if you make friends with it, it's not going to annoy you. If you put up resistance and try to avoid relationship with what is, you're going to go into feeling offended and put off. And upset by your environment. So what I'm suggesting is a way to come into harmony and make friends. I suggest this lesson from the Course in Miracles. All sounds are echoes of the voice for God. All sounds are echoes of the voice for God. So if we regard all sounds as part of the divine pranava, the divine living word, the divine sound current, then you see you're going to reinterpret the sounds you hear in a very, very different way. And what we want to do is upgrade our interpretation and our viewpoint of how we look at life and regard life, how we present the energy of our being into the day or night or workplace or wherever, whatever. Catch my drift? Okay, so here's the practice. Lie there and listen to the sounds. Maybe you've got a couple that are fighting and shouting four-letter words to each other that are not love. The other four-letter words. Oh my gosh, I've lived so much in apartment houses where that, you know. Those were the words you heard. And anyway, I forgot what I was saying. It's so funny. Trying to meditate and you're hearing this stuff going on. It's funny, you know. Now I can laugh. You know, at the time it wasn't too funny. I was trying to be spiritual. I think a lot of you can relate to what I'm saying. You're trying to be spiritual and somebody's, you know, doing F-bombs with every other word. And you're trying to be spiritual, so you don't use F-bombs, or at least, you know, if you do, you feel guilty, right? I'm talking about making friends with the F-bombs, making friends with everything, okay? Let it all just be fine. All sounds are echoes of the word of the voice for God, including the F-bombs, okay? So where was I? Oh, yeah. So what you do is you listen to the sounds, and then you come into a harmony with the sound by uttering a very soft hum. What you're doing is melding and melting into a harmonic resonance with the overall cacophony or the overall atmosphere and sounds in you know, wherever you happen to be, okay? So, for example, I'm listening right now in my room to a fan, a rustle of the trees, and there's a hum of the air conditioning. It's hotter than you know what here. Triple digits. Typical Southern California. Okay, so I'm going to match it with a hum. You got it? Wherever you are, match it with a hum. And that melds you into a harmonic resonance with your environment. Also, you know, if you have your heart afire with love for God, you're sending out a vibration that will probably change your whole neighborhood. That's what happened to us, you know, in our spiritual center here in Los Angeles. We transformed the whole neighborhood. And that's what you do. You know, you come into a harmonic friendship with that which is. Got it? Simple, huh? Oh, that felt good, huh? I see you relax when you stop resisting life. When you stop treating people in life and everything as an enemy, it becomes blissful. You let go inside. There's no enemy. Nobody's against you. The only thing against you is your own self-indictment, your own self-nonsense, your meaningless thoughts. That's it. your meaningless thoughts that have no effect on you except to the degree that you buy into them and believe them. So find the thoughts in your mind that you think with God. Okay, so here is a simple fact here. You have awakened, right? What does that mean? You exist. You're alive, right? And that fulfills the very first part of what the ancient ones call the state of the soul, which is existence, awareness, bliss. But you see, we've mysticized it and esotericized it to the point that we've made it really complicated. Instead of bringing it down into our sneakers and our Levi's and landing it on the doorstep of our daily life, this Satchitananda. But the fact that you wake up is the fact of your existence. Right? Simple. Now, second thing, you're conscious. Hello, you're conscious. That's the second part. Now, you can upgrade being just simply conscious to being aware. And in this case, your awareness is focused into listening. So who's listening? Who is the listener? It's you as awareness. Right now, who is listening? Awareness. The second part of Satchitananda. So now you have existence and you have awareness. And awareness has that wonderful capacity of infinite expansion. So you're always in the process of expanding your awareness. So now we have the second part of Satchitananda. Now, if you've made friends with present isness, and you're in that state where you're in a harmonic resonance and non-resistance to what is, you're going to feel bliss. I went into such bliss this morning, I felt I was going to just explode in fireworks everywhere. I could hardly contain myself. I was in such bliss. And actually, I still am. It's the whole day's been like that. Because I'm sharing with you exactly what I did, and that's why I'm sharing it with you, because that's what I did, and that was my experience. And I thought, well, how simple to describe Satchitananda to people. Because you're already in it. You're already doing it. It's not a doing. It's not a becoming. It's not a learning something new. You're in it. You just didn't perhaps know how to identify it very simply. Now, all these scriptures and holy books and everything, they make it sound really complicated. Like you have to be some sort of Himalayan yogi to be self-aware. And I'm suggesting you can lie in bed in the morning and experience the fact that you exist, that you're aware. And if you don't have resistance, if you're not running againstness, if you're making friends with what's present, you're going to go into bliss. Simple? Huh? Simple. And you can prove this to yourself. You don't have to listen to a word I'm saying. Just test it out for yourself. So you wake up and you exist. You are alive. That's an absolute obvious fact. Now, the enlightened ones take it a little bit deeper. They unanimously declare that you exist forever. Before you were born in the present body, in the present costume, in the present role, you existed. Before this lifetime, you existed. After that, you take off this costume and this role, you exist. There's no such thing as you ceasing to exist. It doesn't happen. So they unanimously declare that you exist forever. The real you, your divine spiritual self, is immortal and exists forever. Only the outer forms and the roles you portray change. Like actors in a cosmic play, we change costumes and characters, but remain the same individual throughout. You do not lose your identity. You don't merge into an amorphous mass. You don't lose the unique awareness of you as an individualization of the supreme all that is. I do not teach, nor have I experienced, nor do I know from my own realization that you ever cease to be an individual with a capital I. So I don't go into the theory that you go into a void or you go into a nothing. And, you know, I think that puts many people off when they think about meditating or realizing, you know, who they are. They don't want to cease to exist. Beloveds, you haven't spent 18.5 million years on this planet Earth alone to become the unique person that you are today to lose it. So take some heart in that, okay? And that's in agreement with a great majority of the masters who haven't stopped at the etheric void, which I spoke of last week. And that's not a good place to aim for. We're not becoming a void. We're not becoming a nothing. We're expanding to recognize that we are the all that is. So only the outer changes, the inner and the divine self that exists forever beyond time, space, and role enactments, is who and what you are forever. The real you. Fact number two, when you wake up each morning, you are conscious. If you wake up, that's obvious you are conscious, isn't it? And if you choose to go deeper, then you simply lie there, being awake, practicing that listening awareness, and that way you choose to be aware. You're aware that you're conscious. So you can take a few minutes to be aware of the sounds, the atmosphere, the feel of each day as you lie there and quietly listen. And then your first thoughts will give you an inner impression. And if you really start practicing this, the teachings and the knowings will have a certain tracing that follows you from the inner plane journeys within the inner realms. And you'll start to build that bridge, that antakarana, so that you begin to have a continuity of awareness from dimension to dimension, life to life. And then, of course, you're living in active immortality. So whenever you fall asleep, and even, you know, I live in several different bodies and worlds at the same time because I've practiced this for many years. And, you know, you can all develop that ability, too, just as I have. But you find, at least when you go to sleep at night, most of us, you're existing in other dimensions and worlds that are as real or more real than the world you awakened to this morning. And so it's up to you to develop more conscious awareness. If you have the intention to do so, you will. And if you don't have the intention to do that, that's okay, too. You just won't be consciously aware of those things. So you have a kind of a, you know, limited view of life. So the inner plane impressions generally fade really rapidly upon full awakening. That's why you have to catch it before the mind gets engaged, before the world is upon you, before the kids and the dog and whatever leaps on you and licks your face, before your husband gets up, or wife, whatever. So you can play possum, you know, just pretend like you're still asleep and just savor that before your spouse or your world is upon you. And you know, if all your thought is, oh my God, I'm going to go to the bathroom before I pee myself, or just don't bother me with practicing awareness. I just want a friggin' cup of coffee, okay? Just let me get my coffee. If you're in that kind of mood, and a lot of us are in the morning, that's fine. But have your coffee or your tea or whatever, and have it with your listening, with your awareness. My absolute most favorite thing to do in the morning is to have coffee with a master. I love to have my morning coffee with a beloved. And, you know, sometimes we just hang out together. Sometimes I talk. Sometimes I ask questions. It's like, well, you know, give me some thoughts about this or whatever it is that I want to look at. And, oh my God, the other morning, I was talking to him about meat eating and, you know, the effect that it has on the consciousness. And all of a sudden, the master, in this case it was Sai Baba, interrupted my train of thought and said, it's much more important what you feed your mind than what you feed your body. And then he pulled my chain. He wanted me to stop watching reality TV. There are certain reality shows I really enjoy. And he said, in my case, it was absolutely a waste of my time. And moreover, it forms attachments with those people. You begin to want to know what's happening in their lives. You begin to feel like you know these people. You begin to assume like you're part, they're part of your reality. And it's like keeping bad company. And I never thought of it that way. Because that's keeping bad company. That's forming attachment with people that you don't have any karma with. But if you start really getting invested in these people's lives and what's going on, you start passing opinions, you think they should do this, you think they should do that, whatever, whatever, you get drawn into their state of consciousness, which is very seldom ever high, and you've created karma, for heaven's sakes. Oh my gosh. I actually stopped acting. I was a drama major in school, theater major, and I was an actor for a while until I read in one of the spiritual books that you get karma for method acting, you know, where you believe you're that character and you begin to act as if you were that character. Oh my God, the subconscious doesn't know the difference between you doing something and pretending that you're doing something, and you get the karma for it. Soon as I realized that, I stopped acting, and every single interest I had in the theater vanished. Now, I'm not saying that to depress those of you that are actors. If you have the karma to be an actor, I mean, you got to do it, right? But I'm just saying that when we overly identify with these people, with these situations, with these dramatic scenarios, it registers as if it were an incarnation. I think that's why there's so many Cleopatras and so many Nefertitis and so many Queens of Sheba and all these, you know. Nobody is ever like the scullery maid or the executioner or the, you know, the people that goes behind the royal carriage and picks up the droppings. You know, nobody ever says they're that. They're always some king, some queen, some great person. I think it's because we watch a lot of movies. We watch a lot of, we think about, we imagine, we fantasize. Oh, you know, I'm fantasizing. I was a great this, a great that. I think that's what we're picking up. So anyway, I didn't want to get off the track here, but I'm just saying what happened to me the other day is that Sai Baba really pulled my chain and said, you know, you're wasting an awful lot of time. And I was watching these things because I wanted to learn how to work more skillfully with people. You know, I'm always looking and how to increase my ability to be of greater service, understand why people, you know, create these dramas and these problems, and, you know, become more skillful. And he said that was all a bunch of nonsense. I wasn't here to become more skillful within the dream. I was here to awaken fully. And in my awakening, I'd help awaken others. So, gee, consider me chastised. So I went in and I erased all of, you know, I deleted all of the movies I was going to watch and all, you know, the test is upon me. Will I succumb and watch some of my favorite reality shows or, you know, I'll tell you, when Sai Baba Pulls Your Chain, I'm afraid to watch any of those shows anymore. So I think I'm not going to be able to watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, two of my favorites. And you know, the different things, I think maybe that's finished for me. And I'm not saying that has to be finished for you. I'm just suggesting that what we put into our minds is more important than what we put into our mouths. And the company we keep with includes the company we keep with through novels, through books, through television. Because, for example, every time you read a book, you are taking on and becoming one with the consciousness of that person. So if you're reading somebody, you know, a novel from a person who's really deranged and sick mentally, you know, you're hanging out in the vibration. You're keeping company with bad characters. You know, that's infecting your state of consciousness. It's lowering it and it's polluting it. And Sai Baba is very, very strict about that. So just saying, okay? I hope I haven't totally disempowered those of you who are actors. Because we have to do what we have to do. But if you are an actor, you can also be a darn good actor and offer your art to God and not identify to the point that you lose yourself in the character. I think that's what I want to say. Don't lose yourself in another person's reality. I think if you do that, you can get by in what we would call like karma yoga, you know, where you do the action but you offer the fruits to God. It's said that if you do that, you don't pick up the karma. If you offer the fruit of your actions to God, then God gets the results. You don't. God gets the karma. You don't. See? So that's desireless action. So I suggest if you're like me, a person with a background in the performing arts, that you, I wished I'd known that back in the years when I was a performer. I did not know. But now, those of you that are listening, that are actors, are in some form of, well, maybe you're a sitcom actor. I work with a lot of actors, you know, living here in Los Angeles, Hollywood. I know so many people in the industry. And, you can stay sane, like Meryl Streep, for example, be the greatest of the great and be very grounded and centered and, you know, have it all together, or like Oprah Winfrey. But it really takes a lot of practicing awareness to hold that and not get lost in it. But, you know, a lot of the actors are, you know, they're practicing yoga, they're meditating, they're doing mindfulness, all of that stuff. So I'm just saying. I heard the absolute best description of God and the soul that I've ever heard. And it was from an interview that Oprah Winfrey did with Maya Angelou. And she said to Maya, "How would you define God?" And Maya said, "God is all. God is the all." And Oprah said, "And how would you define soul?" And Maya said, "Soul is the longing for the all." And I said, whoa. In those two responses, Maya Angelou revealed that she was an enlightened mystic. Nobody could have said that more perfectly. If she had been the greatest, most ancient Rishi, which maybe she had been, I would not doubt it after that response. But isn't that magnificent? God is the all. And the soul is that which longs for the all. Wow. So where are you right now in this moment? Where are you alive? Where are you aware. And right this moment, are you in kinship, in friendship with the components of your life? Some of you are in abusive situations. Probably not listening to this radio show if you are. I mean, you may be. I don't know. You could be in prison. You could be any state, anywhere. It is your responsibility to do everything you possibly can to preserve your well-being, your health, your happiness, and your right to be free and self-determining. That is your right. So you do not have to make friends with a violent, abusive, negative person or situation. It's your duty to do everything in your power to ask God and the universe and everything that you possibly can ask to help you to get out of that situation. So I'm not saying that you put up with horrific situations. But having said that, you know, everything in your life is designed to ultimately work together for your good, for your spiritual emancipation, your spiritual freedom, your spiritual wholeness and perfect bliss and peace and joy. Everything. And I find that people that have the most placid, peaceful, non-eventful lives, you know, they kind of stay there. But people who have been in a living hell, they're the ones that are really intent on liberation, on freedom. So, you know, the skilled rider picks the most difficult horse to ride, right? So many of us are skilled riders in terms of being old souls on this planet. And we pick difficult, challenging lives because we want to test our mastery. We want to see our mastery muscles, you know, see what we got going there. Now, the Course in Miracles teaches another wonderful key. That when we start our day, we should choose exactly the kind of day that we would like to experience. And that is exactly the kind of day we will have if we make no decisions of our own. In other words, to have that ideal day that we would really like to have, we must follow the guidance of the Holy Spirit, which is moment by moment choosing into the loving, choosing into the friendship, choosing into the kinship with all life, walking in loving, well-being, I don't know, how do you call it, goodwill, and not allowing the ego to direct you. The ego, you see, strategizes, manipulates, projects, expects, and demands that things go a certain way, and drives you like a slave. So when you choose the ego's agenda over that of yielding to the divine spirit, which is a gentle and loving way, if you yield to the ego's agenda, you will experience frustration, conflict, hurry, worry, and end up exhausted. It's so draining. It's like when you're just struggling to make everything happen and you just feel like you're 10 steps behind everything that needs to happen and you're just in overwhelm. That's when you're letting the ego drive you like a slave. If you do that, you're going to crash and burn. You know, it's the dog-eat-dog rat race, the ego's nightmare, you know, the maya, the samsara, the hell. So happily, there's another way to experience a completely different reality. And you need to make friends with what is, with present moment isness. You know, you find a way to insert your sound into the collective sound and to harmonize and blend. And then life is as simple as breathing in and breathing out in harmony and kinship with all. So the important thing is that you keep yourself clear. You know, all prayed up, as the Christians often say. Stay prayed up. What does that mean? It means, you know, you don't allow grievances and bad feelings and resentments and all that stuff to build up. You take responsibility for your own inner self. You don't try to change other people. You ask for the light to fill, surround, protect, and clear you. And you ask that any energies, any karma, any negativity that can be lifted through grace, that it be lifted now. You take a deep breath. And you release it to the Holy Spirit. Clear, transmute. It's just going up in the violet flame. Transmute, transmute. And you take a deep breath and you infill with the Holy Spirit. And you ask to be filled, surrounded, protected, guided, guarded, and directed. And in that way, you keep yourself clear. If you have a fight with somebody, you clear yourself. If it's possible to apologize and come into one accord with that person, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But if it's possible, you do what you can to apologize. But if it's impossible, then either way, you have to clear yourself. Either way. So that's, you know, that way you don't come around with a whole lot of baggage and heavy, unresolved stuff in your aura. And you know, most people just don't know how to clear themselves. You know, they pick up energy. If you're a counselor, a teacher, you work with people, you pick up people's energy, and then you wonder why you feel drained. You got to leave your work at the workplace, and when you come home, when you're on that commute home, you know, you start doing your clearing work, releasing and clearing and offering it to the divine spirit, and breathing in God and breathing out love. Breathe in God, breathe out love. And then by the time you get home, you're clear. Or if you have to park somewhere away from your house and clear yourself, you do that. So that when you walk through that door, you can be a decent spouse or mother or father or companion. You know, you're not carrying all that crap from work or, you know, whatever. And same thing with performers. You know, the thought forms of the audience pick up into your aura, the projections and stuff. And I think that's why so many actors drink. Or actresses, or they go into, addictive patterns because they don't know how to release the heavy energy that they pick up when they're acting and, you know, in the public eye. So, you know, life is beautiful. You know, when you understand that it's rigged in your favor, that everything works ultimately for your highest good, and as Jesus says in the Course of Miracles, a happy outcome to all things is assured. A happy outcome to all things is assured. So if you are living in that Satchitananda, that conscious existence, a conscious state of awareness, that conscious state of bliss, you are living in heaven on earth now. And both Pope Francis and the Dalai Lama have stated that heaven and hell are states of mind. They're not specific places per se. But we put ourselves in heaven or hell by our state of consciousness. However, the good news is neither state is permanent. They are how we choose to view life, but they are both mental and emotional states of consciousness and thus impermanent. So you, as soul, as a spiritual being, are forever one with God. You are forever safe, whole, perfect, immortal, right now and forever. So it's only the mind that gets entrapped temporarily in the states of delusion and impermanence and change. But you are forever. Your state of consciousness, your thoughts, your feelings, your moods, your attitudes and beliefs are continually changing, but you remain as God created you, in perfect innocence and peace, now and forever. So therefore, to have peace, you need to make friends with what's going on in your life and in your face right now. You know, Sai Baba said you don't always have to act, you don't always have to oblige, but you can always act obligingly. Like somebody's in your face, you know, reading your beads and, you know, being very negative. He suggests that you say, oh, I'm so sorry I've given you that impression. Please forgive me. I didn't mean to come off that way. You know how it says in the Bible that a soft word dispels wrath? That kind of concept, you know. Oh, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I mean, there's nothing for the ego to latch on when you do that. Because the ego wants a fight, you know. That's how it gets its food. So starve the evil. Starve the ego. Yeah, evil, ego, same thing. Starve it. Don't give it food. Don't give it fuel. A soft word turns away wrath. I'm so sorry. And, you know, you're going to be angry sometimes. You know, you feel offended. But if you can just not react, take a deep breath, breathe in God, exhale love, and give a soft reply, you'll find there's no conflict. You've just diffused the beast, defanged the beast. So, I hope you know how much you import heaven into this world by your being who you are. You probably don't realize that we are here as the kingdom come, as God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We are God's kingdom come. We are the enlightened mystics. We are the anointed ones of this time. We are those who are led of the Spirit, and therefore we are the ones of God, the people of God. And heaven is wherever you are, beloved. Wherever you have imported the conscious awareness of love, wherever you've presented your holiness, because that's what you are. You are holy, and you are whole. Same meaning. And you are so loved. But more than that, you are the love of God made tangible in time, space. And that is heaven on earth. So let's go out chanting on IQ, which is a unifying mantra that is acknowledging that all life is one. And we sing it with a sense of empathy and compassion and love that we radiate to all beings and all countries and all world leaders and all world issues, which are simply requests for love, requests for healing. And so, we love you. I love you. We bless you. And be a blessing. So let's go out chanting one lovely long on IQ. Deep breath. Blessings and grace. Namaste.